Jack Murray from MediaContact.ie, and in the next half an hour, I'm going to talk about five key principles about how to make a festival famous and things that you need to do to kind of get your message out there. So, I'll plug my clicker in. Probably
what? What's your name?
Paul Bradshaw.
So this is me, and if you need to contact me, or you need to tweet me or reach me in cyberspace, the MediaContact.ie account is at MediaFlash, and my own Twitter account is at MediaMurray. So I just want to talk a little bit about, I'm going to be talking about how to get festivals out there, but I want to talk a little bit about my formative experience in public relations and in news and in stories. This is where I grew up. And it's a town called Ballinasloe in the west of Ireland. And anybody who remembers the floods of 2009, this premises is right beside the river, and the river flows out the archway here. And when the floods came in 2009, the flood was up to the windowsill level. And I grew up in this farm supplies business. It was started by my great-grandfather, who you can see here on the right-hand side. He's also one of the founding fathers of the Movember movement. A kid. It's a pretty impressive mustache, though. And he left the west of Ireland as a farmer in 1865, and decided it would be a really mad idea to emigrate to America the year after the Civil War. And he came back 19 years later as a business person, and he set up the business. And it was taken over by my grandfather Joe and my grandmother Frances in 1943. And to this day, it's run by my parents. There's my dad, Joe. So the business next year will be on the go for 130 years. The reason I tell you this story is that this is where I learned everything I know about setting news on a budget. When I was a kid, I used to come home from school, and this was probably the scene I would have seen at the back door of the shop. Farmers from all of the communities around would come in. Most people can identify themselves as being a country person when they start most conversations with the phrase, any news. And this is kind of what used to happen at our kitchen table. So I'd come home from school, and I'd throw my school bag in under the table, and I'd run out to the shop to see what was happening. And this was my festival network as a kid. This was the way I found things out. And my father knows every farm gate from within a 40-mile radius of our house. So much so that when the police want to find somebody now, they don't know where they are. They drive down to our yard, and they say to my father, "Do you know where this house is, Joe?" And he's able to tell them. The first festival, and the kind of festival that has something kind of very dear to my heart, is the Ballinasloe Horse Fair. And it's billed as Europe's greatest horse fair. And as somebody once described it, my town is called Ballinasloe. It's the Ballinasloe man's Christmas. So there's two times you'll meet a native of Ballinasloe in Ballinasloe, and it's at Christmas time, and it's during the first week of October. So that's where I got my background in how to reach out to the media. And 7 years ago, I took over MediaContact.ie, and I purchased the rights to the Irish Media Contacts Directory. And it was a telephone book of journalist details. And we published the book 3 times in the first year, and we're in the middle of doing it this week. And if you want to go mad, publish a telephone book 3 times in a year. It's a very kind of quick route to a mental institution. So we did that, and then we thought, okay, we've got to do something. We've got to provide a platform for people to tell stories and reach out to the media. So we put everything we have on digital, and you'll see in the top left-hand corner here, Media HQ. And Media HQ is the largest digital portal in Ireland for reaching out to journalists and reaching out to the media. And hundreds and hundreds of, and I know there's people here who have used it, hundreds and hundreds of people have used it to reach out to the media. So I'm just going to give you a quick sample of what Media HQ can do.
Here you are with another brand new press release to send out. So, what are you waiting for? Aha! You're either thinking, my dusty old book of contacts just isn't up to date. My current Excel system is way too complicated, messy, and time-consuming. Or, where do I even start to ensure my story gets to the right people? Well, now there's a better way. Say hello to MediaHQ.com, a unique online resource that has gathered the contact details of every journalist in Ireland. With our contact database updated daily, Media HQ enables you to quickly, simply, and efficiently send unlimited press releases direct from your own email address. Think of it as your very own online newsroom. You can search for media contacts in literally any category you can think of, from sports to science and food to fashion, and then filter your results by county, province, or media type. You can also create your own media lists in seconds, or alternatively, choose one of our existing lists that's tailored to your area of interest. With Media HQ, you can pitch stories to multiple groups of contacts at the same time, each personally addressed as a single email. Our duplication filter means no journalist will receive the same press release twice, no matter how many different media lists their email appears on. So every time you send a release, it's always direct, always personal. And along the way, we'll also offer you lots of tips and tricks, from writing a great release to suggesting the best ways to send it. As well as sending a traditional release, you can also publish your story as a social news release and easily share it on both our and your Twitter and Facebook accounts, ensuring you always get maximum coverage. And our social media team is always on hand to ensure your story is pushed out, night or day. Also, for every release you send out, a comprehensive report will be automatically saved in your account, so you always see exactly who's received your release. Not only will we notify you should your release fail to reach anyone, but we'll send you their correct email address and update our database. There you have it, MediaHQ.com. Send unlimited press releases while harnessing the power of social media to get your news heard by those who matter. Sign up for an account today and connect with everybody.
So that's MediaHQ.com, and as of this morning, we took it from an analog platform to one that in 4 years, almost 53,500 stories have been shared through the platform. So we're up to about 1,000 stories a week, and they vary from press releases on local issues to national stories through press releases that are sent out by email through social news releases. And we get to see and learn an awful lot about how people share news through the platform. So here's an example of a story. And Paddy Power were our first client, and as kind of one of the kind of pioneering companies in Ireland in the digital area, they rang us when I took over and they said, go build a digital directory, we'll be your first customers. And it was a really big kind of lift for us. And this is a story that Paddy Power issued about Katie Taylor before she won the gold medal. Taylor tipped to carry Olympic torch through Dublin. If you want to see what people are talking about, go on to Paddy Power's account. RTE used this to distribute press releases, and when I was doing the training in the RTE corporate press office about a year ago, somebody noticed that someone said, why is Paddy Power issuing odds on who's going to get killed next in Love Hate? And that's because they know that if they issue odds on stuff that people are talking about, that it'll get traction and that people will share the stories. The second thing that we do is what I've handed out to you, and I'm going to refer to this a little bit later in the talk. It's Galzek's Guide to Expert Sources. And we wanted to take what we learned from MediaHQ and to produce an expert sources directory, a book of very, very clever people that would be a resource for journalists when they were looking for angles for stories. And I'm going to tell the story in a while about Galzek's Guide and how it started. But just to give you Galzek's Guide in 90 seconds.
Say hello to you, an expert in your chosen professional field, with an opinion worth hearing, but no idea how to get it heard. Meanwhile, the same old people are spouting the same old things in the media, without offering the unique perspective and insight you could. So, how do you get your voice heard? Well, with Galzek's Guide. It's a unique online community that introduces experts like you to the influential journalists, editors, researchers, and producers who create our media. You see, Galzek's Guide knows all the media figures you need to access, while providing you with any training you might need to make the most of your newfound exposure. And with your public profile suddenly rising, your opinions now being heard above the din of others. And your profile will continue to soar, because Galzek's Guide will showcase your expertise online, through social media, and in a unique book that sits on the desks of every decision maker in media. We'll also be talking to journalists regularly, proposing hot topics, and of course, proposing that you talk about that topic. All thanks to Galzek's Guide, the unique community where we've been matching our clients in over 100 specialties with media influencers across every medium. So, sign up to Galzac's Guide today and get your voice heard by the media.
So that just gives you a bit of context to kind of where we come to the debate on the media. So just to talk for the rest of the talk and focus in specifically about the five key areas that you can look at if you have a festival to reach out to the media. So I want to start this story in a small town in Wales, on the border between Wales and England. It's in a small valley in the shadow of the Brecon Beacons, and it's on the edge of the Brecon Beacons National Park. And it's a town called Hay-on-Wye. And here you can see it in the map, and it's on the very border between England and Wales. And it's very much an ordinary town, like any small town in Ireland. It has about 1,400 people that live there. The butcher, the baker, the candlestick maker. My wife is from Bantry in West Cork, and it's pretty much a town like Bantry, but somebody described it to me the other day. It's like a place on the way to nowhere. It's not somewhere you'd stop, it's not somewhere you'd go to, it's not necessarily on a main road. It's a former Norman settlement, and it's got a couple of castles there. But something very interesting happened with a festival in this small town, and as the talk progresses, I'll come back to it a bit more. So the first rule in festival communication is to know your core. And this is a very, very important point that lots of people miss out on. And it's to answer the question of why are we doing this? And all over the world, successful and not very successful festivals happen. And one of the key questions that people don't latch onto is the question of why. There's a seminal work done on this by Simon Sinek called Start With Why. And a couple of years ago, he gave this amazing TED Talk, about the whole concept of why. And he stumbled on what he called a very simple idea. And it was called the Circle of Why. And the Circle of Why explains that we all know what we do, we know how we do it, but very few of us know why we do it. The best companies in the world know why they do things. So when the Wright brothers cracked the mystery and the puzzle of man-powered mechanical flight, they weren't the richest, they weren't the biggest resourced, but they knew why they were doing it. Martin Luther King wasn't the only person who was trying to solve civil rights, but he is the man who mobilized a million people. The best companies know why. Apple knows why they make things. I see people using iPads, using Macs. I see somebody down there with a HP device. Nobody here in their right mind would buy a phone from HP, yet we buy phones from Apple all the time. The two companies are ostensibly the same, but Apple's why is that they want to change the world. They want to change the world by making people think differently. They just happen to make computers. And so one of the key questions is, what's the why of the festival? It's a great American phrase about sticking to the knitting. And what is the knitting of your festival? So it doesn't matter if it's a celebration of the King Goat in Killorglin in County Kerry, if it's a look for a lovely girl at the Rose of Tralee, or like that famous festival in Spain, La Tamatina, if you're just there to throw tomatoes at one another. But the most important thing is that you know what the why is. There to develop a community spirit. Is the festival there because there is a tradition that needs to be served? So is it something that was done for hundreds and hundreds of years? I know in the case of Banisloe and the horse fair, they say Napoleon bought his first horse. The white horse, Napoleon's famous horse, was sold at the Banisloe horse fair. Is it something to bring in tourists? Is it something that you are bringing in to bring money into the businesses in the town and to create employment? Or is it to attract families? If you have a look at this diagram, the thing that's really curious about this is that what is at the centre of all this activity is the core. So some festivals do it for the pubs in the town, or they do it to bring in tourists. But the point is, the core of the festival is what drives everything else. And unless you have a really good why, there's no point in doing that. So to get back to our town that I mentioned at the start, Hay-on-Wye, and in the 60s, like a lot of towns in England and Wales, it fell on hard times. And there was one man in the town who decided that he had to do something, and he had to do something to challenge this thing of a flight of able-bodied men and women from the small towns of England and Wales to the big cities. And this is a man called Richard Booth. And Richard Booth decided that he was going to find a why for the town. And the why for the town became the book. And in 1962, he set up the first bookshop in Hay. And he bought the old fire station. And in that fire station, he put what is still to this day the biggest bookshop in Hay. And I say it's the biggest bookshop in Hay because in a town of 1,500 people, there are 30 bookshops in Hay. And it is now known kind of the world over as the town of books. And what he did was he read somewhere that the libraries in America were closing, and he got five or six able-bodied guys from around the town to go to the States to start buying the stock of libraries that they were throwing out. And they started filling up containers full of books and shipping them back to Hay. So he created a really, really good anchor and a really, really good why. We'll come back to Hay in a minute. The second part of it is to ask yourself the question, who's in charge of interesting? Who's in charge of interesting? This is a question that people don't ask themselves enough. It's one of the things, good ideas get good publicity, great ideas get great publicity. So people need to spend time, quiet time, to be creative. One of the greatest difficulties in the world today is that people are busy. They're really busy, and their heads are so busy that they don't find time. It's a bit like looking for your husband or your wife in a nightclub at 3 o'clock in the morning. I remember advising a friend of mine once who, you know, really wanted to settle down and had no luck finding the right man. You know, you're not going to find somebody full of Guinness at 3 a.m. in a nightclub that you're probably not going to want to spend the rest of your life. You're not going to come up with a great creative idea for inspiration if you're completely addled. And it really is as simple as a seesaw. You can either decide on one side of the seesaw to be interesting, or you can decide that you're going to go with the flow and not be interesting. I do lots of training, I meet hundreds of people every year, and lots of people just don't decide to be interesting. It's as simple as that. And there's a great American line about what it takes to be a success, and it's a doer, a thinker, and a son of a bitch. And when you go to festivals, you meet lots of doers, and you meet lots of sons of bitches, but you don't meet lots of thinkers. And sometimes when there's lots of people doing the heavy lifting, the thinkers are kind of frowned upon. But they're, you know, the thing that you get a wave of inspiration of in 10 seconds could sustain you as an idea for years and years. Another important point is, if you go anywhere where people are trying to think of new ideas, trying to be creative, trying to make a breakthrough, and if you walk in on that meeting and you say to people, this is a bad idea, you will fail. 9 times out of 10, you're going to be correct. But it's in that moment, that's the eye of the needle through which, and if that's the eye of the needle through which every innovation that has been successful has come through in face of that rejection. So that's something to bear in mind. So one of the things that I want to kind of leave with people is this sentiment. Thinking is one of the best parts of living. We spend too much time doing and not enough time thinking. This day last week, 7 days ago, I was getting a train to Cork, and I was getting the train at 6 o'clock, and I cycled through the city on my bike in the dark, and there was a couple of 5 or 6 different thoughts going through my head as I cycled to the train station. And in that moment, that 15 minutes of thinking, an idea fused into my head. And I raced in, I got on the train, I took out my notebook, and I wrote a page and a half of ideas about things I wanted to do on MediaHQ.com. And that was because I'd given myself time to think, and that was the result of it. So back to Hay on Way, and back to Richard Booth. And Richard Booth was the man who was in charge of interesting in Hay. He was the man who made a decision to be interesting. He was a man who sent people to the libraries of the States, and he was the guy who decided he would make it really interesting in 1978. When he proclaimed that Hay was a principality, he claimed Hay as an independent town. He became the monarch king emeritus for Hay for the rest of his life. They issued a separate currency, and in the days before stories being viral, this became viral. The world's media arrived in this small town, and kind of funnily, that decision to do something mad to get the world's attention on his town had an amazing effect. So the third point is, what's your story? What is the story or the angle that you're trying to tell? And about a year after Richard Booth did that. This guy's called Norman. Peter had won £100 on a game of poker. It's quite a sizable loot any time on a game of poker. But this was 1978. And they started talking about what ideas they would... There's Peter. Started talking about what ideas they would have for a festival. And Peter just offered out, well, you know, one of the things we know everybody loves here is we all love books. Why don't we start a literary festival? And in that moment, building probably for about 16 years was a great idea. And the Hay Literary Festival has gone from something that attracted 1,000 people to a town of 1,500 to it's roughly estimated that every year it brings between 400 and 500,000 people to Hay throughout the calendar year. And it all happened, and that's the story. The story that keeps being told every year is about the game of poker and the £100. And Peter Florence is still the director. It was an idea so mad and a story so mad that it keeps regenerating itself. So 12 months into the festival, in his kind of last years, Peter Florence, at 24 years of age, lifted the phone and rang Arthur Miller. And he said, we've run a festival in a small town on the border between England and Wales. It's called Hay on Way. Would you like to come and talk? And he said, Hay on Way, is that a type of sandwich? And the man who had married Marilyn Monroe arrived in this small town. And for the second time in about 15 months, the first time was for the independence of the town, the world's media descended on this small town to cover what Arthur Miller had to say at this literary festival. And so began a movement and a story that kind of kept giving. 12 years ago, Bill Clinton came to Hay. He gave the keynote address at Hay. And when Bill Clinton rolls into town, you know, you get the full works. And he described it as the Woodstock of the mind. So not only did he come and be the biggest guest that they ever had as the leader of the free world, he came with a marketing slogan that they could use for the rest of their days. And this became part of their story. And it's now known as the Woodstock of the mind. So you need to look at your story. And you need to say to yourself, what's the history? What's in the history of this event that we could mine? We need to document the history. We need to find out things that are interesting about the history of the festival. Where's the intrigue? Is there something intriguing about this festival? So in La Tamatina, there's a story told about somebody threw a tomato and it hit somebody by accident, and then somebody else picked one up. And this is not too far from here. If you walked out the door, you'd get there in about less than 10 minutes. This is a coffee shop in Harold's Cross Village called the Black Apple. And it's where I go to think sometimes. And I'll take you back to June of last summer. It was the start of the summer. It was one of the wettest summers we had in on record. And it was the day that Ireland played Spain in the European Championships. I'm sure, Brendan, you'll remember that day. And I was going to the Taste of Dublin that evening, actually. But that day, I decided I was going to make a big decision. So I went to the coffee shop, and there was monsoon rain. And what had intended to be an hour turned into 3 hours. And I even got a free slice of cake. I was there that long. I started doing a lot of research about what we would call the new directory. There was a huge movement in Ireland in the 19th century, before telephones, about how to document where people lived and what they did. And there was a guy called Ambrose Leet, who's buried in Mount Jerome, who brought out a directory called Towns, Villages and Gentlemen's Seats. It was the precursor to the phone book. So I had a look at lots of people like him and had a look at a lot of philosophers. And I couldn't come up with a name. And I packed up my stuff very disappointed and I went across the road. When I was on the white line, it came to me in a wave of inspiration. Can you imagine if there was a fictitious publisher stroke philosopher from the 19th century, a man called Hermann Galzack, who would document the people of document where people lived. And so Galzack's Guide was born. And that story and the story around the name and how it infuses into the product is something of intrigue that people always refer back to. So if you have something that in a coffee shop one day, I said, do you guys have Wi-Fi? They said, oh yeah, we have Wi-Fi. I said, can I have the code? And then when they handed me the code like this, I just lost the will to live. And that's kind of what it can become like sometimes. And the other bit of advice is to be professional. If you treat people professionally and spend a bit of money on professional services, journalists will be impressed. It's amazing what a good cup of tea and a sandwich and a nice desk and some Wi-Fi will do for somebody's mood. And, you know, that's what will get results. The fifth and last point in how to make your festival famous is to use social media. Everybody now goes around with one of these in their pocket, and the most powerful computer that we all have now is the smartphone. And, you know, most people use this, very few people use this. I'm sure nobody in the room is one of these. I used to have a Nokia 2090, the Sherman Tank business version of that, whatever it was. I still have it in the glove box in my car, actually. I still have the car kit in my car. A fundamental change happened to the internet in the last 10 years. So internet used to be organized around documents. It's now organized around people. It doesn't matter if you have 25 people or 25,000 people. If you can make it easy for people to share, to check in, to like, to create content, if you create moments that people will capture and cover, then you'll get coverage for your festival. So it doesn't matter, like, there's hundreds and hundreds of social networks, from microblogging to social networks to discussion to publishing platforms. You need to find the one that hits your core audience, and you need to reach out to it. I mentioned, just before I finish, I mentioned this event that we ran in Cork last week, and it was a smartphone media maker course, and I think some of the statistics are really interesting. So over 13 hours, we had 20 contributors. And you see here on the graph that the spike in contributions was when we were creating content. So this is when we went on our story walk, and this is a very good graph about the long tail of sharing on social media. And in that period, the content created by the 20 contributors reached 35,000 people. So it just goes to show that if you are motivated and you can share content, that it will work. And that there was an exposure impressions of about 120,000 people. We were very motivated. We had a big splurt of creating content for 2 hours, and everybody created about 10 pieces. Some people had huge amplification. They had 6,000 and 7,000 followers on Twitter, and they shared it out, and it got retweeted. So thank you for paying attention and for live blogging the talk, and I hope everybody learned something about how to make your festival famous. Thank you, folks.